I wonder if he called it.
Let the games begin.
Good evening and welcome to tonight's Monroe City Council meeting. This is the regular business meeting for December 12, 2017. The time right now is 7:06 p.m. Ms. Atkinson, will you please call the roll?
Certainly, council members present in establishing a quorum are Scarborough, Hanford, Rasmussen, and Camp.
Thank you. And please let the record show that Councilmember Cutaback and Councilmember Gamble contacted me earlier this evening to advise me that they would be out due to illness. And also that I have heard from another council member that Councilmember Davis is still in commute coming here. And so we will go ahead and note for the record when he arrives. And will everybody please rise and join me with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And before we proceed, without objection, first we'll go ahead and consider the two council members that aren't going to be here this evening as excused absences. And second, we do have a need to modify the agenda. The blue agenda that's in front of you includes under new business item number 1, AB 17207. That agenda bill is at the dais at your position. So without objection, we'll go ahead and we'll make that modification to the agenda. All right, we're going to go ahead and move into announcements and presentations. This first and only item under announcements and presentations is AB 17201. This is confirmation of Monroe Planning Commission, Parks Board, and Salary Commission reappointments and Economic Development Advisory Board appointments. So I'm going to go ahead and call your attention to Agenda Bill 17201. The requested action here is a motion to confirm my reappointment of Tammy Kinney to the Parks Advisory Board and Michael Stenger to the Planning Commission and Patrick Daniels to the Salary Commission. We also had a number of applicants for the Economic Development Advisory Board. You'll go ahead and look through those at the bottom of page 1 into the top of page 2 of the agenda bill. I'll just go ahead and run through those quickly. For the Economic Development Advisory Board, the applicants that we received that we are recommending, that I am appointing and requesting your confirmation, are Cynthia Chadwick from the Monroe Arts Council, formerly from the Monroe Arts Council. She is a resident at large. Linda Driscoll from Premier Polaris, a general retail member. On the top of the next page, we have Patty Gibbons from Heavenly Soap. She's a general retail member. Sue Grafstra from PharmaSave, medical professional member. Renee Jensen from Evergreen Health Monroe, medical professional member. Tammy Beaumont Kinney from the Historical Society, marketing member. Tracy Minnick from Northwest Best Homes, realtor member. Heather Rousey from Original Pilot House Coffee, general retail member. Delma Silva from Remax Legacy, retail member. Bridget Tuttle from Sahara Pizza, restaurant member. And Katie Woods, Coastal Community Bank, professional member. Again, as we discussed back in September or so, the term of the appointment will be fairly short. This is January through June of 2018. And so there are two requested actions, Action A and Action B, on the top of the agenda bill. I didn't see who tapped in first, so I'm going to go ahead and acknowledge Councilmember Hanford first. Councilmember Hanford.
I'll yield to Councilmember Rasmussen because he was first.
Okay. Councilmember Rasmussen.
I'll move to confirm the mayor's reappointment of Tammy Kinney to the Parks Board, Michael Stenger to the Planning Commission, and Patrick Daniels to the Salary Commission.
Second.
I have a motion from Councilmember Rasmussen. I have a second from Councilmember Hanford. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 4-0. Thank you. Is there another motion? Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. Before I make the motion, I was wondering if any of these people could be recognized tonight publicly?
Yes. So if I read your name for the Economic Development Advisory Board, could you please rise? Okay. So we have Ms. Rousey, we have Ms. Gibbons, we have Ms. Kinney, and we have Ms. Driscoll. Here this evening.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Thank you. I move to approve the mayor's appointment of Cynthia Chadwick, Linda Driscoll, Patty Gibbons, Sue Grafstra, Renee Jensen, Tammy Beaumont Kinney, Tracy Minnick, Heather Rusi, Delma Silva, Bridget Tuttle, and Katie Woods to the Economic Development Advisory Board.
Second.
Okay, I have a motion from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Scarborough for the requested action B, for the Economic Development Advisory Board. Any discussion on the motion? Okay, seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 4-0. Thank you very much. So before we move on to comments from citizens, this evening we recognized our volunteers. And so what I'd like is everybody, and that's probably just about everybody, that has volunteered this year for our Parks Advisory Board, our Planning Commission, our Salary Commission, Ethics Board, now our Economic Development Advisory Board. And if I miss anybody else, please rise. I really appreciate all the work that you do. You roll your sleeves up and go into high detail on the work that eventually comes to our city council and to me. I really value all the work that you do, the time that you put in, the thought, your recommendations. Thank you. Council members, do you have anything? Councilmember Hanford?
Sure, just in the spirit of Thanksgiving, very thankful for all that you do. I know the time that you invest is worthwhile, and you are making a difference in our community. And if people like you wouldn't step up, then our community would look very different. So it's good to have you on our side and working alongside of you.
Thank you. All right, we're going to go ahead and move on to comments from citizens. This is a time set aside from members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matter that is subject to a public hearing. Ms. Atkinson, do we have anybody that signed in? Okay. When you come up to speak, public comment is limited to 3 minutes per speaker.
I do not, but I do have oath of office.
Oh, yes. So, as I've done in the past, I forgot that you do need to come up each, and are you going to do it as a group?
No. So, we actually, the Economic Development Advisory Board is not under oaths of office.
Okay.
It's a temporary board, but the other three members that were reappointed, so Patrick Daniels, Tammy Kinney, and Mike Singer are here, if you will step up, and I'll go ahead and administer those one at a time. Can you feel me raise your hand? I will go ahead and do the oath and you may choose to swear or affirm when I'm finished. Tammy Beaumont Kinney, you do solemnly swear or affirm that you will support the Constitution and laws of the United States and State of Washington and ordinances of the City of Monroe, and that you will faithfully and impartially perform and discharge the duties of Park Board member according to law and to the best of your ability and understanding. Thank you, Board Member.
Thank you.
And then Commissioner King.
Sure.
Michael Singer, you do solemnly swear or affirm that you will support the Constitution and laws of the United States and State of Washington and ordinances of the City of Monroe, and that you will faithfully and impartially perform and discharge the duties of Planning Commissioner according to law and to the best of your ability and understanding.
I will. Thank you.
Not once, but twice.
Thank you.
Thank you. So we're going to return to comments from citizens. Does anybody want to come up and say a few words to the counselor? Okay, seeing none, we'll go ahead and move on to the consent agenda. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Motion to approve consent agenda.
Second.
I have a motion to approve the consent agenda from Councilmember Rasmussen. I have a second from Councilmember Scarborough. Any discussion on the motion to approve the consent agenda? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions. Motion passes 4-0. And Ms. Atkinson, will you please read in the ordinance at number 5?
Yes, thank you. Approved through the consent agenda is ordinance number 031-2017, amending Monroe Municipal Code Title 17 subdivisions and Title 18 planning and zoning to clarify and revise conflicting, inconsistent, and outdated provisions in the existing development regulations, providing for severability and establishing an effective date. Thank you.
Thank you. We're now going to move to my blue sheet of paper. Okay, unfinished business. This is AB 17-198, ordinance number 030-2017, approving Easton Cove final plat, planned residential development for final reading. Mr. Swanson.
Thank you, Council Mayor. So the proposal for Easton Cove preliminary plat, there's been some discussion around this, if you remember it, that preliminary plat, and then following that regarding the concern around the secondary access. And so staff is moving forward with amending the code to require that secondary access or sprinkler of units, and that should be before council in January for their review. But under this existing vested document, that wouldn't apply to this plat. And so staff did review at the time of preliminary plat and final plat and ensured that it was consistent with the RCW 5817100, and it did meet the requirements of preliminary plat and the applicable state and local code. And so with that, staff recommends approval of final plat.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. My computer is running slow.
Got it, so got it up here.
He's got
it. Mine.
I move to adopt ordinance number 030-2017, approving the final plat planned residential development for the Easton Cove subdivision, FLPPRD 2017-03, setting forth supportive findings, providing for severability, and fixing a time when the same shall become effective. Thanks.
Second.
Yeah, I have a motion from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Rasmussen for the requested action that is identified in Agenda Bill 17-198. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion abstentions? Motion passes 4-0. Did I have the motion and the second right on that?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, good. All right. The next item that we have on our agenda this evening is, again, going to the blue sheet of paper this time. New business item number 1. This is AB 17-207. Authorize the mayor to sign memorandum of understanding with the Monroe Police Officers Guild regarding new health insurance carrier. Mr. Worthen.
Good evening, Mayor, Council. What you have before you is a memorandum of understanding between the city and the Monroe Police Officers Guild. We do have an agreement for the new labor contract, but we don't have the fine details ready for voting tonight because the guild hasn't voted on it yet. Part of that package is then moving from our current high deductible health plan with Alliant to another high deductible health plan with AWC. That should generate about $10,000 in savings and provide the same amount of benefits to the police guild. So in order to make sure that they have coverage effective January 1, this MOU, if signed tonight, will allow me to get the work done to get all of them moved off of the one plan and onto the new plan so they have cards and they have insurance effective January 1 under the new insurance.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. I move to authorize the mayor to sign the memorandum of understanding with the Monroe Police Officers Guild for changing health care carriers effective January 1st, 2018 from Alliant to the Association of Washington Cities, AWC, and expressly authorize further minor revisions as deemed necessary or appropriate.
Second.
I have a motion from Councilmember Hanford. I have a second from Councilmember Rasmussen for the requested action as shown in the printed agenda bill number 17-207. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 4-0. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ben.
Next item that we have on the agenda then is Council member reports. So Community Transit Board of Directors meeting, Councilmember Cuddeback isn't here this evening to report on that. Snohomish Health District Board of Health meeting, Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. So tonight's, or this afternoon's Board of Health meeting, Council, we were successful in passing our 2018 budget, but did have a lengthy discussion leading up to it, which makes me very thankful for our council, our staff, and Becky, the budget that you helped put together, bring forward to us here. Because after being part of both programs, this was hands down the easiest one here. The health district budget, as I said, did pass. One of the biggest sticking points, however, was the doing it with a significant cut in WIC First Steps program, almost $190,000, and then also a drop in marijuana and tobacco prevention income from the state. Even with that, where the health district was able to pass a budget without any layoffs or additional cuts. The big sticking point that took up the majority of the conversation was there were two budgets proposed. One, with the health district taking over the countywide syringe exchange program, and one without. And there were some great presentations on both sides of the for and not of the syringe exchange. Ultimately, the board chose to pass the budget without the syringe exchange, but asked to have staff bring it that conversation back in the first part of next year for further discussion. I think from my point of view, all the data that was presented to us was a value in, or showed value for the program, a lot of unknown. But the thing that really I struggled with as representing Monroe was the fact that it was a program that came to us, that would come to the health district in a pretty substantial financial deficit already, and there was no plan a plan or anything on the table that showed us how it was going to move from that. So, you know, it's already with a third-party entity that gets a little support from the State Department of Health, as well as the small chunk of personnel assistance from the health district that I and the majority of the other board members felt it would be best served at this point to keep it as a third-party entity and on its own out of the health district at the moment, even though it is something that the health district, or falls within the scope of the health district. So that being said, so yes, the budget did pass and without the syringe exchange. That is a conversation that is going to continue to come up in the health district, and I would love to hear the thoughts of council and our Monroe staff on with syringe exchanges and good, bad, just hear some feedback on it. We already have it in Snohomish County, but it would be nice to hear from everyone else before it goes back to committee at the health board. Other than that, I didn't get around to stick around for the ceremony, but Donna Wright, council member out of Marysville, today was her last meeting after serving with the health district for, I believe, 24 years of her 31 years of serving the Marysville Council. Don't hold me to those numbers. I know they're high, but I may be off by a year or two. She was also represented Snohomish County on the State Department of Health for many of those years as well. And so today was her last meeting, and it was sad to see her go and know that she's not going to be a part of our group anymore. She brought a lot of value and a ton of knowledge to our group. So other than that is my report, and and certainly open to any questions.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much, Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you.
Great. All right. The City Council Finance and Human Resources meeting minutes are in your packet. And I think we reported out, I think Council reported out on that last week. Yes, I'm seeing nods. Perfect. All right, we'll just go ahead and go down the line. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. Nothing. Happy holidays to everyone. And have a good, safe holiday.
Thank you. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Nothing tonight.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. Yeah. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Happy New Year. Appreciate all the staff. Enjoy your break and your holiday time. I guess we'll see you back next week though, for a little bit.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
I can't do any more than has been said. Happy holidays and please be safe.
Thank you. We'll go on to staff. And staff's all intermingled there. I'm sorry. We first have a community development update. Mr. Swanson.
Thank you. So the monthly report is in your packets with the map. Shouldn't expect much change to the map. We didn't receive any new applications for subdivision last month. One thing I did want to update you on is our process in developing the new code for unified development regulations is what we're calling them. And so Planning Commission has been working very diligently. Three of the commissioners here tonight, Rousey, Stanger, and Bull. And so we've upped from two meetings a month to three meetings a month to try to meet our June deadline. And then we're also going to have a Saturday meeting where we're going to try to knock out quite a bit of material. So we have a lot that we're going through at a pretty good pace, but everybody's getting some good time with the code. I don't think we're pushing it too fast, but we still want to stick with that June deadline. And in addition to that, I requested a joint meeting between Planning Commission and Council in February, and so that way we can bring what we have so far with the code and sit around the table and kind of discuss and basically check in with Council at that point. And I'd like to have three of these meetings before June, just so we don't go down the wrong path and everybody's on the same page. So that's kind of that check-in goal as we go through the process.
Sounds good.
And also one additional thing, if you know of Bubba's up in Sultan, they're actually opening here in Monroe fairly soon, just at the old, was that Chain Buffet?
Chain Buffet, yeah.
Chain Buffet, just off Chain Link there. So I heard it's really good.
And what's it called?
Bubba's?
In Sultan, it's called Bubba's Roadhouse, I think.
Yeah.
It's nice to see something filling a vacancy in our commercial properties, for one thing. Have we got anybody with any interest in the old Albertsons business?
I have not heard of any.
The last I heard was Box Retail Outlet, but I've made a couple of phone calls to the listing agent and haven't gotten any return call back.
Box.
Okay.
Thank you. Anything further for Mr. Swanson?
Thank you.
Report from Parks and Recreation Department, Mr. Farrell.
Thank you, Mayor. Good evening, Council. So in the monthly update for Parks and Rec, it's in your packet. There's an update on the process of the master plans for Cabin Site and Lakeside Park. So there's all the background leading up to tonight. And we anticipate that Council will have it before them for adoption in January of 2018. The next item is the fact that the crew has installed the exercise stations at Sky River Park. So they're there. They're just doing some little finish work of restoring the turf around them. They had a pause a little bit there with some river flooding. So it's kind of the name of the game there at Sky River Park. And then the next item is the Centennial Trail connection to Monroe. And if you recall last week, I pointed out that due to your support, the mayor, city council, and your action in making a formal request of the Snohomish County Executive Council to include funding in the 2018 capital budget for stream crossing designs. This is for that Centennial Trail connection from Snohomish to Monroe. We have learned that they have included $250,000 in their for 2018 in their capital projects budgets. Good news there. Then I have a mention of the Light Monroe event, and I know again that was a spectacular lighting event, and the trees looks wonderful. And then the last item is our ongoing weekly inspections of unmarked trails, Al Borland, Scarborough Park, and you'll note that for 3 weeks, again due to river flooding, the Scarborough Park inspections did not occur for 3 weeks in November. That is all.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. Mike, thank you very much for this. In regards to the exercise equipment at Skyward Park, do we have a date by chance of, I guess, a ribbon cutting or some sort of grand opening celebration?
We would like to do that, and we will do that. I don't have a date yet.
Okay.
So we're just doing some finished work, so stay tuned.
Excellent. Thank you. Looks good down there.
Thank you. Anything else from Mr. Farrell? All right. We have a report out also from the Public Works Department. Mr. Fallberg.
Good evening. As usual, the monthly report is in your packet with all the project status reports in there. The one interesting, exciting, hopefully, thing is that the Burlington Northern will be closing Freilands Boulevard on Tuesday for all day to put in new panels that they're crossing there for the sidewalk work coming up. And they have told us that they have a flyer available for us beginning January 8th, which will mean that then the contractor that we have hired can work inside their right of way to put the sidewalks in. So hopefully that'll be done by the end of February. So that's all I have.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Fallberg? Okay, I see none. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Brad.
Other staff updates? Chief? Okay. Ms. Hassert?
Nothing this evening.
Okay. Is anybody else that I'm missing out there? Mr. Worthen?
Nothing.
Okay. All right. We normally would move down to the floor for the first discussion item. I'm going to propose that we remain up here. Before I do that, though, I'll go through the merit administrative reports. Ms. Knight?
I don't have anything to do either, Mayor.
Okay, sounds good. As for the extended agenda, we do have a meeting next week, and so that'll be a short meeting for swearing in, and then our next meeting will be January 9. Okay. All right. Also, Monroe This Week is in there for your review. We will now go ahead and move on to discussion item number one, AB 17205, sick leave policies. Mr. Worthen.
Thank you, Ms. Frayer. This won't take a lot of time. It's a discussion for a reason. I do, if you don't...
Councilmember Scarborough, you can come on over here if you like.
I'm all right.
Great.
You can play attorney.
No.
Pays a little bit better. So I will pass these out. These are straight from the labor industry as well as...
Thanks.
So initiative 1433 was passed in the fall of 2016. It contains, right, like it says, four primary changes. The one that required, the one that's the big thing for us is that we now have to require sick leave for most employees. And what most means for us is we have to provide that for seasonal employees, which we currently do not do. For every 40 hours worked, they get 1 hour of sick leave. So that is the biggest thing, impact to us. We will work on how to work that in with our existing collective bargaining agreements and everything over the next few months, which we will have time to do. Every 40 hours worked, the employee accrues 1 hour paid sick leave. Full-time employees, we already do this. We give all senior employees get 8 hours of paid sick leave per month. So we're good there. Temporary seasonal employees, currently the city provides sick leave. Employees are eligible to use paid leave after the 90th calendar day after they start employment. Currently, we don't have any restrictions on that for our full-time employees, but a policy decision is going to need to be made based on our seasonal or full-time, or seasonal or temporary employees. That's where you guys come in. We are going to need to decide that before we implement the policy. Do we want to have the 90-day essentially runoff period, or do we want them to be able to use that sick leave prior to the 90th day? Keep in mind, our seasonal folks will only typically work about 5 months, Mr. Farrell.
Yes.
Mike's the bulk user of our seasonal employees, if you remember. So that's just an area that we should start thinking about as we look to implement this. No decision needs to be made today.
Ben, does it change the buyback policy at all?
Does it change the buyback policy at all? We are not required to pay them out. What we are required to do is basically leave a bank in place for their, if we rehired them, that they would still have their accrued time back within a year. So, and we'll get into that. But right now, that wouldn't change. We don't buy out anybody that's hired after 1/1/2013. Is their sick leave? So that wouldn't change. And obviously everyone before that's already vested in a different policy. So the other thing that the law does is it really broadens the scope of what you can take sick leave for. Authorized uses of sick leave effective 1/1/2018. An employee's own health condition, no big deal, to care for a family member. The big one is here, child regardless of age or dependency. So that means if you've got a 6-year-old and he or she is sick and you need to take the day off, that's fine. Or if you got a 36-year-old and you need to take a sick day. That is different than what our current policy allows, so we'll need to change that. Parent, spouse, or registered domestic partner, grandparent, grandchild, and sibling. The only way those were covered before is if you were in loco parentis or had a durable power of attorney. They're now saying that if you don't need those documents, that if your grandparent or grandchild or brother or sister needs to be taken care of, you can use sick leave for that. So. And then absences that qualify under the State Domestic Leave Act, that's already covered. It's already an authorized use for sick leave. When an employee's workplace or a child's school or daycare has been closed by a public health official. If there's an outbreak and the public health official closes the school, that's an appropriate use for sick leave. It does not include weather closings. I put that in this for you because I figured you'd ask that. So, yeah. Carryover. This is what Mr. Scarborough was asking about earlier. Employees may carry over 40 hours of unused sick time into the next year. Employers can allow a more generous carryover. The year must be defined. This is another thing we're going to have to make a decision on. We can do it as a 12-month calendar year, January to December, or we can use a rolling year measured backwards, similar to FMLA usage. And there's no need to get into the detail on that today, but we will, as we work through this, I'll bring back more details. Full-time employees are already allowed to carry over 40 hours per year, so there's no need to change that policy. What we do need to figure out over the next, 3 months in March, when this needs to be fully implemented, is what we want to do about temporary or seasonal employees carryover. Questions at all?
Councilmember Scarborough? No questions? Please continue.
Please let the record show that Councilmember Davis entered chambers at 7:39. Good evening.
So, next steps, we need to notify every employee by January 1st. And you can do that through the new L&I posters that Labor and Industries has sent out, and I've already started putting those out for employees. That is all we need to do right now at this point. We need to update policies, and then we need to have further discussions with the union. I've already had a brief discussion with the union, and as you can imagine, the Teamsters represent a lot of business lines, and they're having the same discussion with a lot of people. At best, from everything that I can tell from the attorneys that I've talked to, from the webinars I've sat on, from the union business agents that I've talked to, the law's a bit murky still. So we're going to work through it as we will. We know we need to provide sick leave to our temporary seasonal folks. We do have time. We don't start hiring seasonal folks till April. We need to have this fully implemented by March. And I would guess that my next step to bring this back to the Finance and HR Committee as this gets more fully baked. But again, I just wanted to put it on your radar so you know that we are going to implement the law. That's what we do here. So, and let you guys know if you have any questions, you can ask me.
All right. Councilmembers, any questions? All right. Seeing none, thank you very much, Mr. Worthen.
Yeah. You're welcome.
I'm going to go ahead and
We will recess for just a couple minutes and go down to the floor. We will reconvene in just a couple minutes with a joint Parks Board meeting and City Council meeting for AB 17-206, Parks Master Planning. And again, we'll be in recess until 7:45 on the clock. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so we are now back in session. This is the joint meeting of the Parks Advisory Board and the City Council. The time right now is 7:47 p.m. And I believe, Mike, are you going to lead us off?
No, sure. Sure. All right, tonight, Juliet Baugh and Bill Friends are here to present the focusing on the final master plans for each site and the draft costs. And costs are very conservative at this time, developed as if a contractor is building everything shown on the master plans. They have started gathering information for different funding opportunities and partnerships as a way to reduce the city's portion of implementing these plans. They will be discussing these opportunities further at this meeting, along with the results of the last open house and any remaining comments to the master plans. I'm going to turn it over to Julia.
I guess I got a mic, so. I figure people already think I'm yelling at it. I project so much. Okay, so thank you all for coming tonight. I think this is the last time we'll see you, at least in 2017. We have a little bit of a history. I'm not planning to go over any of it. I'll just kind of flip through, but I always like to show the context in case there is anyone in the audience or people who may not have been at the last meeting. So we'll flip through that very quickly. We do want to spend some time talking about the results of the last public meeting and the survey. So that's the packet that we handed around. Figuring folks could share a little bit, but we'll walk through that just to give you the highlights. I think it does inform what we want to discuss today and what we want to spend the bulk of our time on, which is phasing and cost estimates. As Mike said, the costs are very rough still. They're still kind of a work in progress, and they are definitely a draft, but what I really want to spend the time is talking about the strategy behind the costs, the assumptions we feel comfortable making associated with those costs, and more importantly, if there are changes to the design that we want to make because of those costs. So if there's any changes to phasing, mostly as a result of the comments that we've heard at the last open house and survey, and then if there are changes related to the cost estimates themselves, are probably our highest priorities to try and tackle tonight. We usually are going to try very hard to end at 9. We tend to run a little bit over with lots of discussion between two parts. I know you'll help me get that through. And we've got till about 9:30 at the latest today to try and wrap up. So with that, we're going to go ahead and get started. A little bit of context. Everyone, I think, knows where we're at. I do like to remind people just of the process to date. So kind of starting with yearly analysis and initial surveys of what people wanted to see at the park. We did have a lot of fun with our pop-up studios and really getting the drawing and the prints out and getting lots of people engaged. I came back to you guys for a joint meeting to discuss what came out of that pop-up studio, start to really make some decisions on what we wanted to see in the master plan. Have been back a couple of times, had an open house, which is what we'll talk about in front of you, and then where we're at now, which is our kind of our last anticipated joint meeting in this forum, hoping to get final comments and directions before we try to wrap up and go through a more formal adoption process. What's not shown on here, but one of our next major hurdles beyond just adoption itself is next year is a grant cycle for RCO. So one of the reasons we have this compressed kind of fast schedule is so we can be prepared to potentially submit a grant during this next state grant funding cycle. And that happens in, usually have to make some decisions around February, March in order to get those grants ready. So that's kind of, keep that in mind. Lots of feedback, lots of ideas, and really at the last open house we showed the two site plans that you guys previously saw. We showed the phasing, and then we followed up with an online survey as well as comment cards at the open house to ask them really what do you think, or how did we do in terms of listening to you, in terms of the ideas that we proposed, and then what do you think about priorities, what should we build first? Bill?
We did have a fairly compressed public engagement schedule as part of this. I mean, over 3 months, it's rather unusual to have a design process happen as quickly as this one has, or a planning process happen as quickly as this one has. But the community really did jump in and participate. We had wonderful participation in our pop-up studios, at our first questionnaire that went out, and even at our open house November 1st, it was dark and we still had about 20 or 30 people coming up about various designs and give us their input.
I'll also say it was fun that people at the open house, I would see them later when I went out to Lake High to check out the site, and they would stop and they would talk to me and they would be so excited. So that was kind of fun. And then they still come to the next open house too.
And the level of comment, I think the last time we were together we talked about that too. You know, very, very thoughtful, constructive comments came in on the survey. So it was something that we really were able to, I think, anchor some of our proposals in fairly solidly. But after the open house, we wanted to make sure that we made these plans available to people to take a look at online, and we did ask several questions, and the responses you'll see here on the desk. And some of the things that really we wanted to make sure we could check during this process was, are we on target with our vision statements for each of those parks? Remember, we had something at the beginning that we've consistently refined as we've gone through this process to make sure to capture the type of nuance and use that people expect out of these facilities. We have a scale of 1 to 5, and they all scored right about a 4 overall. So I think generally we have what we could call consensus support for the direction that Ken and the entire team. So both of those facilities seem to rank right around 4. But there are some issues that I think we might want to talk about this evening that will help us really nail down what we want to do for phasing and how we might want to maybe tailor the planning proposals for the various features so that they fit as well as any two. We'll be able to talk about them in terms of cost, and that's a very important context, but I think it's also important for us to reflect on some of what people, of course, are suggesting here in the questionnaire. So when we look at cabin, one of the topics that came up in the park board and the council conversation, what do we do about camping and RV facilities here? And I'm not sure that we see a lot of guidance in how we resolve that question definitively in what we've heard from the public. There is a lot of ambivalence. Many people are very enthusiastic in supporting it. Others think it's really not a good idea at all. So I think that's something we still have to wrestle with. There seems to be a fairly universal concern about policing the cabin space to make sure we have use patterns that are consistent with what the community hopes for on that part. Also, people seem to be looking for a level of simplicity in cabin design. We take advantage of the site's natural features to the extent that we can, and not necessarily try to overdevelop it. People are also talking about flooding. This came up last time we were here. How do we design improvements that are going to be resilient to flooding, or are going to be easily repairable, or cheaply replaceable, because this is a fairly dynamic context. But I think we also see probably the clarion call for this park is to have river access and make sure that we're able to use it as an opportunity for people to move from the upland to the river and take advantage of some of those things. So the priorities that came out of the survey, restrooms, if we're going to have a park there, people really do want to see restrooms on the facility. And then the two other things that stand out as strong priorities are the trails. Making sure that we have an opportunity to walk around the pond for a trail system and we have access to the water. So moving on to Lake Tai, and Julia will talk about some of the phasing plan and planning concepts here later on. But the people who are responding to the survey seem to like the idea of waterfront walk-in experience, but they're not necessarily convinced that a boardwalk is the way to do it. And they seem to be excited about opportunities for development partnerships to achieve that objective and not necessarily put the burden entirely on the back of the city. Folks are, of course, concerned about parking. This has been a consistent thread in the conversation about Lake Tai. We're increasing the level of activity. We also have to make sure we increase the amount of parking we provide for it. Some folks are concerned that maybe we're trying to fit too much improvement into the South End, and that of the things that we do want to put in the South End, there seems to be a great deal of support for increasing the playground size, accommodating activity there. And we were there with the pop-ups. The place was overflowing. And there also seems to be a level of ambivalence about the splash pad or spray fountain feature at the south end of the park. Some people are citing potential incompatibility with sand along the beach, and some people are also saying maybe another location for
for it, a better location for it would be closer to downtown, so we have an opportunity to engage those neighborhoods in outdoor activity like that. So anyway, that's something to think about. And there also seems to be a lot of support for enhancing the fishing experience and making sure we have compatibility between the folks who are swimming and the folks who are fishing. Don't want to necessarily have hook engagement with people who are in the water.
Yeah,
it's a sad thing. Taken from someone who's actually had hook engagement. Totally self-inflicted, however. And so some of the priorities are that we really work to get the trail completed. We take advantage of the opportunities existing on the east side of the park, and then the development opportunities on the north side, and then enhance the western more nature type of an experience on the west side. Playground expansion is a high priority. So I would encourage you to take a look at some of those comments. I think it's a very rich field of suggestions. Many of these things apply not only to the planning, but also to future specific design for the project. And some of the ideas are really quite good and quite well informed. I think it's something you might want to continue to reference as you move forward into park design.
One other thing I would add, if you get into the details of what people said in their comments, you know, there were always, you know, a lot of like, yes camping, no camping, yes spray park, no spray park. One of the things we discussed quite a bit at our last meeting was the potential for on-street parking on Fylands Boulevard. And you'll recall, we left the kind of a note to say potential on-street parking during events is kind of how we phrased it for that open house. And that had mixed reactions during the open house. The people who came were like, no parking on Fylands, but when you discussed why and where and how, they were kind of like, okay, well maybe, but just not permanent. And the online, you don't quite have that ability to discuss and discuss back and forth. There were definitely a few that says, no, don't park on Fylands. So I think we talked about that, knowing that would be a sensitive topic. I think it definitely still is, would need to be explored quite a bit further before anything necessarily implemented. Okay, so those two bar charts are in. I think there should be enough for you guys to share for the priorities. It'd be great to flip to those pages, flag it, or even kind of pull them out. When we get to talk to phasing, it'll be helpful to look at what those community, the priorities were. All right, so Cadman site, we're going to go park at a time. So Cadman site, internally, we're still kind of building the report, so I just wanted to kind of throw a little bit of the flooding that we did talk about, so we have it available if questions do come up. We spent a fair amount of time last time going through the flood dynamics and what that means in terms of development. There wasn't really any specific site-related changes based on the open house that we made. I think everyone, like we said, when we asked them, we showed them the site plan, we said, what do you think, one out of five being the best in the world, and one being try again. And it was four. Pretty much everybody with a few of those specific comments were really supportive. So we haven't changed anything directly in the master plans themselves. Unless there are any questions, I was just going to blow right past this and go into cost and phasing.
Any questions?
Okay. Same as before, some examples of what that is. Okay, cost. So this is part of your packet. Hopefully you had a chance to kind of at least glance at it and get over the potential sticker shock so we can talk in more detail about what some of these costs mean. As Mike said when we started to get into this, what we do when we start this process is we broke it into phases, which we talked about in the past, what phase was which. We assume each phase is built completely independently. So there's no cost efficiencies in mobilization or fencing or, you know, clearing, grubbing, any of that. And we also assumed at the start that a public bid prevailing wage contractors were going to build everything that we showed in here. Once we looked at that, then we started stepping back and saying, okay, now we know what the reality of kind of a cost is, and this is still in a fairly ideal world. So in an ideal world, if you're gonna do a large planting area, you want to put the soil volume to make sure the plants are going to survive and you don't have to maintain them. If you're going to try and reduce costs, you might reduce that soil volume some because it is expensive and you've got a great maintenance staff that really does care and maintain your plants. So maybe you can balance those two a little bit.
When we talked about flooding, we talked about resiliency, you know, build it to last the flood costs more, build it to just be able to replace it costs less, but it's an ongoing cost. So there's all kinds of sort of balances in the assumptions and the philosophies and the strategy you take on when you're budgeting and estimating these things. The other thing I would say is we are very conservative at a master plan level. In our experience, as I'm sure in yours as well, it's not always easy, but you can reduce costs any number of ways. It is very hard once you set a budget to go find more money. So we assume the high and the more grander scale of just about everything. We don't get into the fine detail of, yeah, there's some existing vegetation we could save. We assume we're redoing all of the vegetation. Yes, it's a conservative number. No, you probably aren't going to have to at the end, but something's likely to come up that you might need to use that budget for. And at this kind of early stage, by assuming there's very high costs, we found when you get to actually through a design process, through all the permitting process, through everything that affects project designs and budget, we end up with something that you still really love for a budget you can afford to build. So that's why we start very conservative to begin with. What the other thing I'd say with these construction costs, and I am focusing on the construction costs, we like to show total project costs. It does create more of a sticker shock, but it's, I think, a stronger reality when a cost that you have to recognize is not just what it's going to cost to the contractor, but you got to design it, you got to permit it, and you need a good, hefty contingency for all of those unknowns. And that can add, not quite two times your cost, but it adds like a good 50% of your cost when you think of your total project budget. So all that kind of what we call the soft costs are built into the total. I'm going to focus on the construction cost because that's what we have more control of. And when you go to a public and say, this is what it's going to take to build it, this is what people are thinking in their head. They don't always recognize the soft cost, so we like to split them out for that reason, too. As Mike said before I get into details as well, what we're doing now is we're looking at refining of those costs. We've met with Mike to kind of talk about what's reality, how we like to do things here, what are some of those good assumptions, how do we shift, who can pay for what, where are some of those partnerships, and what can we assume for grants. And so as we go through each of these phases, we're going to talk about what those assumptions can be, and they will start to affect these dollars. So right now, these dollars for Cadman include some assumptions that the Cadman company is going to have to actually take on some of these costs in their restoration effort. So for example, this berm that's in phase six is a fully planted berm. We assumed in our estimate our contractor fully planting that berm. Then what we do is we then discounted most of that, I think we said about 80% of that cost, and in the berm case, 100% of that cost, because Cadman is going to be required to revegetate before they actually turn over the site. So these numbers include and reflect Cadman building and restoring that site that's already built into those costs. What's not built into these costs, grants, volunteers, and other partnerships. Cadman was a given. The rest of those are really more optional in what we feel is reasonable to make for assumptions in our budgeting moving forward. Any questions on that before I get started?
Questions?
Okay. Purely phasing, one of the things that came out of the discussion, okay, we get into numbers, I need my cheat sheet here. One of the things that came out of the discussion from the open house on the Cadman site phasing was the highest priority was to actually loop the trail. The way we currently separate the phasing, we have building the core of the improvements first, and then accessing the river with the trail second. The actual loop to finish going around the pond is all the way towards the end of phase six. So one of the things that makes a lot of sense to me based on the comments we heard is to shift that these phasing and actually include the full looping of the trail in with phase two. So that it's not perceived like you're going to get halfway around and then have to go back.
So that kind of made a lot of sense. That was the only thing I really heard in particular. Trails were the highest priority, which we have a good, I think, trails around the lake were the first priority, to the river were the second priority, which we've got them more or less between 1 and 2, would completely cover that end. And then wetland trails were the third priority, which 3 and 4 really are through a lot of that wetland and riverfront system. So I think we're pretty in line with what we heard from there.
One of the things about the phase six as it was proposed here is that it really is relying on the partnership with CADM to complete.
Mm-hmm.
And so it may have just accelerated to happen earlier anyway, depending on CADM's readiness to go after that remediation.
That's true.
Ms. Ankus, question?
So maybe you mentioned this and I missed it. Did you talk about what material you had assumed for the trails?
I did, but I could. The main trail around the pond itself would be a paved surface so that the loop around the pond is fully accessible. We would have full accessibility to kind of an overlook to be able to see out to the river. The steepness of the grade from there to the river is significant. So we actually anticipated a paved trail for the main launch, this portage, to the river itself, and also along here, which is the more car park can carry launch. Those two would be predominantly paved, probably more like asphalt or something more solid to promote accessibility and just easy maneuverability. The rest of the trail system would be a soft surface or a rock. So crushed rock, gravel is what we currently have estimated. You can actually reduce the cost by more, even in more informal mulch type trails even further. We left them at gravel and I think about 8 feet wide as kind of a significant trail system because of the crime prevention concerns, visibility concerns, and for maintenance vehicles to be able to easily circumnavigate a lot of those trails. That's why they're wider and a little more developed, and there's a cost associated with that that would otherwise occur.
Any other questions?
Would less expensive material require then more maintenance, so in the long run ends up costing a little more anyway?
To some degree, yes. It depends on where it's at. So for example, we originally estimated this actually paving this road and improving and expanding the parking by making it an improved paved parking. And talking a little bit further, this is the main route for the river. When it does flood, it comes in through that gravel area. The decision was it's gonna create the debris instead of trying to put in the money and make it more resilient. Yes, the pavement will last longer, but you gotta still clean all that debris out. We may as well leave it gravel and just, as you clean out the debris, replace material as needed. So that was a decision, you know, along the scale of resilient versus repair, replace. It was in the replace category. Strong enough that it's not going to destroy the whole thing, but not try to make it fully resilient since it's the most volatile part of the entire park.
I
want to
I think we'll come back to Ms. Kaplan.
Yeah, maybe it's too early in the question. For each phase, it would be helpful to identify the elements within each phase.
We'll walk through each one of those next.
Too early.
Yeah, we'll walk through all of them.
Okay, my question just had to do with the logic behind the priority in comparison to, like you were talking about the loop, the ponds, the trails being a higher priority from a community, but yet it's Area 6. Is that based on, I guess my question
is, how the why? It was originally a reality of cost. So we actually had installing like little islands, actually filling islands into the pond to be able to control views, give it some more interest. Really expensive thing to do. What we decided was you're probably not going to do it unless CADM's got a bunch of material they want to dump, and great, you can dump it and go build our island. So we ended up, and so one of the reasons this was in 6 is because it actually was one of the more expensive elements because of those islands, and replanting all of this was very expensive. When we went back and then looked at what CADM's restoration plans and what they're going to be required to do anyway, we actually discount the city's portion significantly, so it makes a lot more sense now to bring that back up.
Related to phasing, one other thing that we might want to consider is that since there is such a high degree of ambivalence over how to approach the question of camping, maybe this becomes the new six, as we have a chance to live in the space and figure out how best to use it.
The reason seven is seven is, again, it's a very high cost because all of that is through wetlands, which Boardwalks, we'll get into the detail, is one of the most expensive elements on this park. And so seven has, like, over a mile of boardwalk. And so it's really very expensive to build. You're probably not going to do that until you have Department of Ecology grants and a lot of other grants. It's just a large cost to try and absorb as an agency by yourself.
Ms. Carpenter, anything else? Anything to say to Joseph?
That was my question.
Okay. Anything else? All right, continue.
Okay. So other than that one change to making the trail six basically now part of two, I don't propose any other changes in the phasing diagrams. We'll get into the cost specifically. Okay, so let me just kind of flip through. I don't know if everyone can read this or not. So, and while I didn't put this on the slides, I'll repeat them. Create the core construction cost, about $7 million. So think of it in terms of parks. So this is about a 64-acre park as a whole. Parks right now tend to cost between $1 and $2 million per acre for a fully developed, improved park. Lots of reasons to do less trails, natural areas, more lawn and planting, lots of ways to reduce costs, but to build a new park from scratch, which is what this essentially is, that's kind of what it tends to run. So this first phase is, can't remember the acreage, but it comes out to about $7 million in construction cost. Area 2, which is getting the trail and the boat launch, the hand-carry boat launch, comes out to about, we'll say $700. Area 3, which is then connecting over to the hand-carry boat launch and improved parking, plus the wetland boardwalk trails around the edges, is about $800. What we called Explore the Forest, this is really a natural nature system walk, fully developed, was about 1.3, camping about 3 million, looping the pond about a million, and the wetland trails with all of those boardwalks about 8 million. Big numbers. So what we did is we went back and we looked at, for each of these phases, what's included, what's driving those costs, and who else can help us build them. And so that's what we want to focus on for a lot of this. All right, so phase one in creating the core. There's not a ton of cabin in here because their proposed restoration is to basically reseed and reforest. Now here we don't want them to reforest because we want lawn. So there's some refinement I think we can do to say, okay, Cadman, instead of putting all that money into vegetation, put it into really great soil so you can actually use the lawn and it's not soggy wet during the summertime, at least, not when it floods. Put it into helping us build a parking lot, put it in other things instead of the planting that they're required to originally do. So there might be some additional cost savings. What they were planning to do was seed and restore it because it was originally more of an open kind of area. So there's not a ton of cabin shared costs in this one. Grants, the biggest grant opportunities we see really for this is at RCO. And RCO at local parks is about a $500,000 match. It's about $1 million grant, but you have to bring half of that to that grant program. So you really are getting about $500,000 in cost savings from an RCO grant. There might be some other ones I'm looking into for like an actual the hand carry launch portion of this could add potentially to that about another $500,000. But it's not a 500,000 boat launch, so there's some offsets of that as well. There's not a whole lot more that I can see in this initial phase that could be offset by others. So that's kind of the long haul in terms of improvements. We have a question?
So what you're pointing out here is a $7 million start. And of that, you're looking at $1 million in grants, maybe?
I've got about $500,000 in grants likely. If we want to make some less, that's my more conservative. There are some potential for other grants you could do. I don't think they're going to be that significant, but
but we could continue to make some other assumptions for maybe a couple hundred thousand more, 250, depending, you know, the volume of this boat launch. The other one I do want to look at more is we could also make a more, a less conservative assumption of having cabins contribute to this phase in lieu of a forested restoration. So right now I'm just saying whatever they agree to do is my given, and negotiating something else would be that next step that I don't have included in here right now.
Thank you. Any other questions?
When you say an RCO grant, what is RCO?
Sorry, RCO is the Recreation and Conservation Office through the state of Washington. It is the largest source of parks and recreation grants in the state. It is a highly competitive process.
So you're showing a crossing there. What is the likelihood of being able to get that crossing permitted and approved?
This one here?
Yeah.
That one would be a bridge crossing over what is actually a new channel. So it is already an existing culvert, and that exists. And what we're actually proposing is to open that culvert to an open channel and then span it with the bridge. So this is an improved condition from a habitat standpoint. Although, again, an expensive one.
Well, you had also mentioned to me several weeks ago that that's actually one of DOE's for Fish and Wildlife's.
I forget which organization. We'll call it Department of Ecology, I think, but it could be Fish and Wildlife. They have two set projects on their list of known salmon and habitat enhancement projects on the Haddon site. One is to improve this offshore channel, and the other is to actually improve an area just south over here for offshore channel habitat. Right now, the costs of doing that are actually not in our estimate at all. Our assumption is, again, that in and of itself was in the double digits of millions of dollars because of the significant earthwork to make that happen. Our assumption is that's not something you're going to take on as an agency. It's that departments really feel this is a great enhancement, that they will contribute a significant portion of that funding.
Other questions on the slide?
Okay, so the second, before we move off the slide, this one, however, we do have a significant portion of the funding coming from Cadman. And so that is because a lot of the cost in here is for restoring this edge and actually vegetating that edge of the pond. All of that cost, we're assuming, is taken over by Cadman. Some of the cost of just laying in some gravel or some less restoration in the trail is potential, and a grant to actually do the boat launch itself. You have a 50% match for the grant, so that's kind of that portion, and there's a fair amount that Cadman has already done, so we're kind of expecting there's still some cost of restoration that you'll have to do. Question?
Yes, Councilor Sherbert.
And the price, and back to the other slide, the price on number two is what?
The price on number two? No, the price on number two is $680,000 total.
So this is basically about
smaller shingle.
Half of it's ours and half of it elsewhere.
Yes, half ours and half elsewhere.
Any other questions?
Okay, three and four. So three does not have Cadman contribution into it because this was an area that was already restored by Cadman. It was a wetland created as part of their mitigation for their original dredging and work on the site. So they do not have plans or requirements to go back into this area. So this is a predominantly city cost. The grant would be for a boat launch, a hand carry boat launch through RCO or LEA. They're both state and agencies for recreation and water access. So that is the predominant cost there. This one was about $800,000 total. Before I forget, one big thing I was promised I would mention, in phase one of the largest costs in that $7 million, about $2.3 million is to extend sewer down to the restroom. It was the most important thing to put on the site. It is the most expensive thing to do on the site. The other most expensive thing is the fill required to get that area out of the floodplain and the earthwork to then create more floodplain and offset that. So that falls into that resiliency category of most expensive, but will be a longer term solution. Question?
Just on the restroom. So did you explore other options on the restroom besides just?
Not at this point. We did talk about composting restrooms, vault style restrooms. in general would not want that, because as soon as you go below ground, you're into the flood zone again. So anything connecting it into sewer, or you're trying to lift it up so high that it doesn't make a whole lot of sense anymore. Now you don't want a flood. temporary restroom, something movable that you would just move out of the way, that's certainly an option.
Not to my word.
Okay, any questions on 3 and 4 before I move on? Anything with those?
3 and 4, any questions? Sorry, go ahead.
Okay. 5 and 6. So 5 right now is camping in the woods. Tonight you start to see partnerships. So Cadman has a fair amount of restoration to do, but this actually is an area that's in mostly currently forested. So Cadman's restoration is associated with all of this part up closer to the pond. This part is developed into the forested area. So there are certainly some ways to develop more sensitively. I'm assuming that general contractors going in there, grading, drainage, you know, a full improved development has a fair amount of restoration in and of itself. So that's my biggest potential in looking at where we could reduce costs in this one, is to make it a softer approach to a campground than a fully, and so I guess one of the questions often will come up, so there is no, what do you call it, pump out, right? There's no pump out here. You have to do that over at the fairgrounds. It does include electrical at each location. So we do have some higher costs for waterproofing the wiring, but the actual outlets are up and a post above the floodplain. Have a question?
Yes, customer service price of that.
Yeah, so price is here.
2.7.
So camping in the woods, 5. This is 3.2 million. A good chunk of that is in restoration, almost $1 million in planting restoration in order to truly build what we're showing here. So again, build it smaller, build only half of it, build it with a softer footprint. If we want to show reduced cost, we could look at those options. I'm assuming a partnership here, in that potentially you're going to get somebody to come and partner with you and manage this. That would be a person you'd expect to put in some of that infrastructure.
Since you're going to put the biggest expense in sewer around it, why couldn't they encompass a pump out station somewhere along that sewer line instead of having to make people go all the way to the fairgrounds?
Yeah, it was about $2 million to get the sewers to this point. To almost double a location across the pond and over the bridge was another significant cost. But it's certainly something you could do.
Yeah, I wasn't thinking of having to take it over the island. I'm talking about some.
Oh, to put it actually in the restroom? Yeah, potentially. I don't know what all goes into that, but I assume you probably could.
Okay.
Do a pump out.
Because making people go to the fairgrounds is probably not a real life item. Where if they can just do it on the way out, they might be more apt to come down.
Okay, you can look at that. All right, other big cost in here is you start to get into the bridge.
Oh, Ms. Jeff.
At the current time, do you have any geotech information on the whole site?
Of the what?
Geotechnical information.
On the whole site, we just have the geotech studies done by Cadman as part of their permitting process. We don't have anything from after they've left the site. So there is some basic geotech information around it. I don't have any borings in this area, for example, but there are a lot of information kind of off around this more developed portion.
Anything further?
No.
Okay,
6. So one of the things in 6 is that we did not include the cost of putting in these islands. The assumption in terms of how we would present this in a final report is if there's an opportunity to get material from Cadman or other places, it would be something to be considered. It's still part of the vision, but not a cost that we would actually ever build without significant contributions. This was $980,000 total. The planting was the biggest cost in this, which is why you see Cadman having a bigger percentage and portion of that cost. Good question?
Councilor Cervera, your islands are for what purpose, and that's aesthetics?
It is basically aesthetics, and to make the whole pond appear larger and give somebody who's going to actually put a tube or something in the pond some place to actually go, as opposed to just an open pond.
I would suggest that there are going to be activities on the pond to have islands out there where people might go would be a pain in the backside for parks to pick up garbage and keep clean.
That is one potential, so we just want to remove them. They're very expensive and not likely to get built without somebody else to come in and do it.
Business.
Anything for the Councilman Sherman? Councilman Hanford?
I concur.
Is there anybody that would argue to keep the ponds?
I'm not saying do it out. I'm just saying if you put activity on the pond, you're going to have garbage on the islands. Be my guess.
Is it Huck Chittenden? Who is that now? Tom Sawyer.
Tom Sawyer.
Tom Sawyer.
Always.
Okay, anything else on these two phases? Okay. Phase 7, this is kind of the rest of the park. This one, there's, Cadman is really not restoring any of this. It's already in its natural state. This one is $8.6 million, and of that, about $4 million is boardwalks. It's a lot of boardwalks. This is probably one of the biggest, most expensive elements of this park. One thing I would look at, if we're going to make a change based on cost, this is the area I would probably look at it first. So removing the ponds, I love them, aesthetics, but it's expensive and makes maybe less sense now that we see the cost. Here, I think it's important to try and continue a trail system, but we could certainly modify that trail system so it's less actual boardwalk.
And one of the comments that came out of the questionnaire too was that, you know, the wetland is probably something that's best viewed and not necessarily entered into. People were concerned about the impacts of people intruding into that in the wetland space. Will overlooks conservative stuff, but don't necessarily be eager to go in there.
And we've got wetlands here that we can interpret that are constructed that were kind of designed for that purpose. We could stay out of the major wetland system over here entirely. We have two questions.
I'm going to touch on the first system.
Oh, thanks. There's all. I'm assuming you're wanting our thoughts.
Yes.
So my thought is, that's a whole lot of expectation for funding from the city for boardwalks going out over wetlands. Not sure that that's a huge priority. Kind of concerned about that. I'm all for seeing wetlands, but
This is one of those things where you draw a line on a plan and then you realize the scale of the line you drew on the plan is a whole lot of boardwalk.
Any for the customer answer?
No, so I'm not in favor of that.
Okay. So the server.
Of that 8 million total. 8 million is the cost to maintain that boardwalk part of that, or is that
it is not
construction?
These costs are only construction, not maintenance. Mike has part of the response to that.
Councilor Sherber, anything further? Okay, so we have Mr. Farrell and then Board Member Capitol.
More of a question with the Department of Ecology's or Fish and Wildlife's project. It's just, you just have a general description of it. So I guess my point is that it could be possible if the city were to invest in boardwalks that some sort of future restoration, the boardwalks would need to be removed or not.
No, not likely. So the city, I was anticipating a different question. I jumped the gun. So I'm sorry. The question I was anticipating is would boardwalks get built as part of those projects? And no, they wouldn't. The projects are actually to really do the in-stream channel work, which we still stay well away from. So there would be, if you were to build them, they wouldn't necessarily be in the way.
That was
But yeah.
Thank you.
There were a couple of
the grants, and would there be a potential for partnerships considering that we're seeing a lot more wildlife and waterfowl? Is there a potential for a partnership perhaps?
So this is how conservative do you want to be with our strategies and our budgets? There's always potential. If you go to the Audubon Society or those organizations, what they can afford to give you, like 20 grand, 10 grand, I mean, volunteers is a potential, but volunteers, we could show up later to build trails. I don't generally would have volunteers build the boardwalks. in water, it's sensitive work, it's not quite the appropriate use of volunteers. Department of Ecology are major agencies that might be partners to help fund because you're being able to access this great wildlife. They don't want the boardwalks in there. You have to mitigate for them. So they're great funding partners to do a lot of habitat that people can't see, but it's great for wildlife, less so to bring people into that space.
Would you yield for a question on that?
I have one more question.
Sure.
One more question. Rather than the extensive boardwalks, perhaps limiting or to a more interesting area or one. I like the idea of a boardwalk for accessibility, but totally understand it's one of the more expensive features. But rather than having a mile's worth of boardwalk, that maybe it could be something much smaller or an observation deck kind of thing.
I think that's the direction we're going as well. But I'm seeing lots of head nodding, so I'm going out on a limb and thinking that that's kind of supported by everybody.
Anything further? All right, Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. I really like boardwalks and the concept. Obviously, the price is there. Yeah. It's concerning. The facing, so this is phase 7. So can you just kind of remind us kind of the time frame we're going to start on phase 1 today. How long out are we looking at phase 7, assuming that everything else is flowing and the funding is there and so on and so forth?
You're talking probably like your 20-year plan, maybe?
Okay.
Realistically, if this is $7 million and you put a lot of effort and time, $7 million, even with our CO grants, that's going to take you probably a couple of years, if not longer, to kind of gather that kind of level of funding. Even if you don't do all of it, you do pieces of it, it's still a significant scale of a project. We've got wetlands over here to build. You'd get that similar experience with something closer and a bit more accessible. By the time you got out to all of this, I really do think you're in that 10 to 20 year plus kind of time frame.
Okay, thank you. And that's a great reminder just because, as we're going through this, we're thinking, holy cow, boardwalks and the expense, but this is also something that is, as you say, about 10 to 20 years out. So there's a lot of things that could change between now and then. A lot of the grants that we're talking today may not be available, down the road and stuff like that. So I guess it's just, don't want to completely eliminate a concept like this. If the public has found value in it, we've previously found value in it, just based off of data today, necessarily.
What I would say is the Department of Ecology and some of that larger restoration work is also kind of flood-type related work as well, so there might be other funding sources down the road when flooding continues to become a problem. You as a city, I think I would probably reduce it. I would make some note on the plan to say expand as possible with future blah, 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 in order to sort of say we'd like to see it, but I think it's realistically you would make it part of a project when you come in to do the restoration and the flood work or anything else that would happen. Kind of try and condition it on whoever is going to help fund that work.
Anything further? Councilmember Henford.
Thank you. Yeah, my question was just along the lines of partnering. If, like, Forterra is an organization that would help with that.
Yeah, particularly in the restoration side of it. Definitely. A lot of acquisition dollars from Forterra, but there's definitely some restoration and conservation futures type funding. Those types of things are certainly possibilities, which is not even in my $8 million cost.
Thanks. Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough?
On the left-hand side here, your red line, is that the road that's currently going out past on the red line on the left side? Yes, is that the McCarran Road?
Old Reformatory, just an Old Reformatory Road. That's that road.
Why couldn't we use that instead of boardwalks?
To kind of get a larger loop by improving a trail on the edge of the road.
Well, would that be cheaper than a boardwalk?
Yes, it probably would. I believe the slope, well, let me take take that back. The slope is fairly significant, so, but it would still probably be.
The road is what?
This one from the edge of the pavement, it actually slopes pretty quickly down into the system, so getting enough width for a trail would still be difficult.
Who owns that road right now? One family lives out there, and then past gas.
I believe it is a public right of way. At least that's the way it shows on the map.
Okay.
Up until a point somewhere down here, and then it turns into something else. But it's
like
the opposite. 176. It's 176 up here, and then it's Reformatory Road through here. I will also mention a good portion of this is not actually your property. It is the Reformatory property, which is another reason why I excluded all of that restoration cost.
Partnership.
Great, thank you. Good night. And then board number, yeah.
So the cost estimates then aren't indexed for inflation. These are today's costs.
These are today's costs.
Good night. Board member, yeah.
This is probably brought up and whatnot during the early discussion is about the boardwalk treatment of debris.
Yes, so the bridges that we have in here would be raised and or kind of what they call a breakaway. It's hinged on one side, so it's intended to, it's anchored on one side but not the other. So with the velocity of a river, depending on the flood, it breaks away and there's a restore element to it, but not a replace element. So again, that resiliency scale. So that's kind of these bridges, this one being less at risk than this one. The rest of these are in a floodway, but not the major channel routes that would be at greater risk of being a blockage to anything. So they're kind of aligning with contours, not going against them, if that makes any sense.
I would think the annual cost of buster for shoreline.
So the shoreline buffer, so it is within a wetland buffer, which trails are allowed, including boardwalks. The shoreline buffer we stay out of, you would have to actually span that shoreline. This is a fairly narrow channel now. What we're showing is an actual large channel as part of the restoration. So the edges of this, we think, would span outside the shoreline jurisdiction. This is a designated shoreline, like type 1, I believe, because it is an offshore channel habitat. This is type 1 down here. So the type 1 with the larger buffer, we avoid entirely. The type 2, we try to span with a smaller buffer.
Anything further? Board member, yeah?
No.
Okay. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. Two questions. So one of the comments was that people camping here would be seeing the apartments that are somewhere over here. And I'm wondering if that's the case. Like, what kind of view of all this, the library, Boys and Girls Club, any of this is going to be visible?
Yeah, so this is on its own. So if you go out there now, you kind of see the topography go down to a low point, and you see the kind of forested knoll beyond it. This is tucked into that forested knoll. During the wintertime, or during the summertime, this is heavily vegetated. You're really going to probably block most, if not all, of the views. During the summertime, people in these apartments here or standing and kind of walking along the backside of the library will probably have some peekaboo views to those areas. A bright red rig would be visible because of the color contrast. Some areas might be more visible than others, but I think it's going to be partially visible, not fully visible.
Okay, and then the second question was on mosquitoes in the pond, like how that's going to be.
So in order for, the pond itself has a number of different outlets into it, and that is part of why we want to actually improve the channel and the connectivity to allow greater flow of water through there. But outside of that, it's a concern that would need to be addressed during design. So there's not steady flow into and out of that. There are some options to improve it, but not to the extent you have to actually figure out some still. Or recognize that, yes, there are going to be mosquitoes in a pond.
Okay, Councilmember Kent.
Thank you. Is that an exit point, the water channel?
So it's connecting the offshore channel into the pond itself. So during the floodwaters, it actually floods in here, and this is where the exit point goes.
Right.
So connecting these two, it would basically flow that way more so than this way, but there's not, it's not like it's a river. There's not a lot, there's no flow going into this, and thus the waters are raised.
But you mentioned more in answer to the mosquito question. You said there's more outflow of that's what you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, there's kind of minor, so during seasonal kinds of storms and stuff, there would be flow going out here. It is very minor.
Okay.
Yeah.
But as a normal dead of summer?
Normal dead of summer, no storm, no rain in a very long time, it's going to be fairly, it's going to be
solid. Got it. Thank you.
So let's do a time check. Okay, we're good. All right, Councilmember, I'm sorry, Board Member Depp.
What's the depth of that pond? And have anybody taken any water sample for quality?
So we've not been able to find water quality samples. I think you brought this up the last time when I started to delve into some of the background material on Cadman, and again, it's rains. I didn't see anything that was really kind of strong water quality that stood out. It still may be buried somewhere in there. One of the things that as a design team moving forward into final design, you would want to do some additional research and some modeling, both in geotech, water quality, and flood hydrology and mapping would be important before a final design phase. It's part of the reason why the design costs are higher in our numbers than what you might otherwise expect, because there's a fair amount of engineering that goes into these kinds of facilities. The depth of the pond is like 23 feet from just verbally from the Cadman representative that was on site with us. So it is very deep. It goes deep fast.
Any other questions? Okay, please continue.
Okay. I will say, just as an offset to that, one of the things we're looking at is getting in the water, but not necessarily swimming. So boats, but not necessarily a big swimming beach. People will still get in there, but it's less encouraged. Okay, that's it for Cadman site. I'm heading on to Lake Tai. All right. So background, same thing here in terms of the sites themselves. There wasn't really anything major changing. The question I would have here is, do we want to continue this overflow event parking on the street? We did hear, I didn't really see anything or anybody that said yay on street parking. Once we explained it, people were more open to the idea of it. The written comments, there were about three, I think, that said don't park on Silence. So I don't know if we want to keep that in or not.
What would other options be? I'm sorry.
Board Member Whalen.
What other options might there be?
So we left it with really overflow events. I think the idea is, and we did discuss this, that this might happen, is if you do it for overflow events, would it end up ultimately being a year-round? And that's kind of the concern. When we talk to people, okay, sure, you close down the road for an event, why not allow parking? But if it was suddenly year-round, full-time, permanent parking, there was concern with just too much parking on Silence. So really, we included it as a way to provide a little bit more organized potential parking for when there are major events. The other options you have are what's currently already available, which is back behind the school, there's existing parking, and we're already proposing to improve that connectivity for pedestrians. And then what happens now is it spills into the neighborhood, and that would continue to happen.
Okay. Anything further, Board Member Wynn? All right. Councilor Hanford.
Thank you. I don't like the idea at all of parking on the fountains to the point of putting up signs. I love the idea of, here's a triathlon. We shut down one whole side for the event and possibly use some of that for parking and then run the traffic down the other side. I'm all for temporary closing, but I don't think the signs and the parking on the grounds is smart at all.
I'd make that qualification a stronger statement, which is maybe what would be needed.
Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
I concur with Councilman Hanford. And then when we talk about partnering, well, we're talking about more parking on weekends. So partnering with the buildings across the street to have parking available to us on weekends, and those two basically the Boys and Girls Club down to the next little strip mall down there.
Yeah, just kind of that whole.
You want to see it? Well, from the Y down to the Burger place or whatever, the state or farmers insurance in that area. Or for that matter, partnering with the folks are going to own all that.
What?
The area behind, there might be something open that we could purchase for a parking lot.
Oh, that business kind of thing in concept?
Yeah, or maybe there would be some partnering with it.
Okay. So partnering with the kind of commercial development adjacent.
Yeah.
And then managing street crossings accordingly.
Yeah.
Anything further, Councilmember Jumper?
No.
All right. Ms. May?
I was hoping that there was going to be some recommendation that came out of this for acquisition of additional property for parking. I don't think we need to be specific about the size, but at least that would allow us to go out and find those grants for acquisition. Because as it is now, if all you do is focus on on-street parking or shared parking, you don't have anything in the plan that allows you to point back and say the plan says we should go out and look for additional parking. Because I can imagine that there are some parcels that would make good acquisitions both for trail connectivity and trailhead sports and Sentinel Trail coming out of the south end.
Thank you for mentioning that. We did go into detail on the site plan, but we are proposing kind of so along those lines, we have future trailhead in the park-owned property. We've kind of put some arrows that generally direct us potentially outside our property. We stopped short of identifying potential acquisition for that reason. At one point, we had opportunity for partnership or some kind of words that we could use in this area, but we ended up pulling that off because it just was maybe a little too strong.
Right, and in my experience, having the word acquisition is what you need in the plan in order to point to it when they say, show us where in your plan acquisition is part of it. So yeah. Somehow you're going to have to work that word into it in order to make it a viable option.
It may not show up on the site plan, but it certainly
needs to show up on the site plan. It needs to just general acquire parcels adjacent for future parking and trailhead.
Yeah, we can definitely build up that language in the plan itself.
Throw those words in there for us, and that would be extremely helpful.
Yield for a comment? I concur with what you're saying. I didn't mean to say that we don't need partnering or something like this. If we have to acquire it, it needs to be done.
Yes, appreciate that.
Board Member Kinney?
Two things. Number one, I think it would be confusing to allow parking during events on islands, and at other times, maybe we don't want that. Number two, I think the whole point of having these parks is to get people to ride their bicycles down, walk down. If we create too much parking, we discourage folks from doing that. We live in the islands, we can easily walk down, and we should encourage that as much as possible. And thirdly, there is a ton of parking in the industrial area surrounding the park. And people can walk down for a concert. I think it's great to find additional parking, but I also think we need to make it a goal to have at least folks who live in the islands walking with their families down there, the kids ride their bikes, and encourage that as much as possible.
Don't forget also, we did add 40 new stalls in the open space adjacent to the existing parking as well. So we maximize parking on the site to the extent we could already.
It seems like the underlying issue is to try to minimize parking impact in the neighborhoods. Just exploring techniques that help us get there. Mm-hmm. And if it is encouraging bike lanes and cycling, that also would reduce parking impact here. And maybe some of it is locating parking elsewhere in the park to serve the uses and facilities that maybe want to use.
I think one of the things that you're hearing here is sort of the theme of what is park. There are times where the park operates in a very regional sense, where you've got activities that draw people that don't walk because they live outside city limits, or they live on the north side of town where there isn't a park. I think that's part of what you're hearing too. Is the park one that you walk to and ride your bike to where you live nearby? Or is the park one that draws people from outside the area and outside of city limits, but also from around the city? I mean, like I said, you're not going to ride your bike typically from the north side of town to get there. I think that's why the parking is important also. And I agree with the idea of looking at acquisitions and matching with a potential trailhead.
Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. So as someone that lives right earshot of the park, my house is probably, I'm sure I can see it on the diagram there.
Yes.
That with whatever event is going on, I mean, it's the constant outcry that I hear. Everyone parking on the streets, and some not parking so well, and driveways and so forth. So having that alternative, closing off fire lanes is, in my opinion, still an option. It's not the best option, but it's one that is out there, especially when you're considering the alternatives, especially the people that live right there by the park. And just being very clear on that from a council perspective, I think having that clear, are we saying all park events, farmers market, or are we doing like the regional events, having that discussion.
How would they actually do it?
Finding that, exactly.
Just go down and refer to your house.
So I guess I don't want to necessarily rule out the parking on grounds necessarily, just because I think with good explanation it could be feasible. I was hoping, I was going to ask about the possibility of off-site parking acquisitions coming up, so I'm glad that did. I think that, in my opinion, really solves a good chunk of that, especially for the regional events. When I think of all time is Tri-Monroe, having that ability there. Now, the existing parking behind the school, that's Fairfield Park, is that what that's at?
Yeah. Fairfield County Park.
Okay. So county property, are we able to, if we have an event, or is there a lot of activity that we have to go through that if we kind of open it up to for capital park there?
I suspect we'd have to check with the county. Do you have any experience with working with the county for park and Fairfield County Park?
Very events,
yes. Okay. And then we just have to work something out ahead of time?
Yeah, we've done that. I was making a point Deborah and I were just discussing as far as some past history of park, basically keeping it simple, events, parking issues. No events at the park, no parking issues. And this is what the current capacity of the park is. But we're going to start looking ahead in the future, and that's what we're talking about master planning here, is that, especially the north end, try to more increase trail use, some video development, those sorts of things. As was mentioned, the need for more parking, and it's nice that have found, some on-site additional parking that and really it's got no events. And in fact, at Fairfield, yes, we do communicate with certain events that require additional parking to share that parking at Fairfield and County Park.
So is it, if I may, Mike, is it pretty easy to gain access to it then, or?
Okay. It has been, yeah.
It has been.
Yeah, yeah, we coordinate with them, as long as there's not another event there. So.
Okay. Anything further? Okay, Councilmember Starbuck.
To help Ms. King, I think somebody can help me if I'm wrong, but I believe we had some sort of agreement about parking along the street on that end of the industrial area that it wasn't going to be done because of the big trucks and whatnot, the wanted access to everything there. I think you have some sort of covenant that they can park in there on the street. I remember it coming up at one point. So it might have to be something to look at before we start saying, hey, let's park along the street.
We discussed in the last meeting that there might be something along, which direction is north again? Okay, nobody east, along the east side, that there might be some restrictions for parking, vehicle turning movements, freight access in and out. I hadn't heard of the south side that being an issue, but having said that, I think there was enough. We have it with this master plan process. We're not able to dive into the detail to see. What I'm hearing is, instead of just overflow events, potential overflow during major events, we can kind of qualify that a little bit more, but also then incur some stronger language about additional parking and partnerships and acquisition easements for parking.
I think the reality is the best solution is one that combines a lot of different options so that you're not building out massive parking for major events.
Got that on the side of that line.
Yeah.
While we're getting an acquisition.
Yeah. Anything else on this one?
Great.
Okay.
All the ATVs and the
show. So, the note to parking, in summary, will change and we'll add some language, but I'm not hearing any other major changes to the site. Okay. So, let's talk. All right, all the same qualifiers. The difference here is we don't have cabin. So right now, these costs are all as if they were city building everything. So partnerships and other things have not been accounted for in what you're seeing on the summary pages. So let me just let everyone's trying to read it. Okay, so one, improve the field. That's this portion of the field. That's taking the current natural, making it a synthetic turf and adding lights. Also improving some of the sidewalks and trail connectivity around it. We have about $750,000 for that project. It's fairly enclosed, it's simple, it's graded. There's not, you know, the light is kind of the only utility.
If we, sorry. Well, thank you. We have a grant that is still pending, the capital budget being approved for $800,000.
Yeah, we estimated it would be about $2 million.
$2 million
to do the two
fields, sir.
All right, I may have only looked at one field then. Let me double check.
I was going to say, wow, I got a deal with
it.
We want to know who your contractor is.
Julia
is
now opening a contract.
I know.
Yeah.
So the baseball field, too.
Right? The soccer field and the baseball field are closest to the school.
These two fields, not this field.
Correct. Got it.
Okay, that may only reflect one field then. Okay, so we'll kind of go on from that. Two is the main focus. Okay, so phasing in general, let me talk phasing first. So one of the things that came out of the comments from phasing is connect the park, you know, circumnavigate the pond with kind of trails of the highest priority, and trails on the north end were the highest priority, trails on the south end were the second highest priority. We have the trails on the north end kind of at the very end. Some of the logic behind that was focus our efforts where the most people currently use the park, and then work our way around. That north end may very well be a more important phasing. So I wanted to think about just, do we want to move that up in phasing first and foremost?
If I can add, one of the things that we had talked about the last time we were together was that, just like with the cabinet and looping the pond, this is something that has an opportunity for partnership with land development if it were to occur here. And so the actual ultimate outcome of that project may not be a boardwalk at all. It might be more of a shared Belvedere type of thing where you have a commercial use on one side and the boardwalk on the other.
Which is kind of another reason to not try to build a boardwalk first if there's opportunity to get some cost out of a shared partnership approach. But if it's the most important thing we want to try and tackle, we might want to move it to not, at least not be the last thing either, which is where it's currently at. So for example, instead of 5 and 6 being the edge conditions that are already existing, maybe 5, you know, 5 and 6 are kind of somewhere over in here instead. I don't think I'd make it the first priority because, again, there's lots of other opportunities, but you start talking the millions to get us down there, and again, you're in a 20-year plan. So I would like to move that up to at least maybe more of 5-ish range, possibly even 4, you know, just to get it in there sooner.
I'd like to, I don't know if this is something that would maybe benefit from staff and Parks Board vetting a little bit more, but one of the things that I would acknowledge is that with the Centennial Trail coming in on the north end, we're going to want to have a receiving end. You know, we're going to want to have a receiving point for that. So I think that we'd want to at least have some coordination there with when the county anticipates beginning to build that connection there. But, just thinking, it sounds like a more in-depth conversation than the half hour that we have right now. But let's go around. Board Member Whelan.
Maybe I'm operating on old or erroneous information, but the issue of the north end, there have been a lot of ideas over the years of things to do there, and it just always seems, at least in my experience, there's always been a lot of restrictions on access and what we can and can't do there. And I don't know how much that speaks to the narrative of what we're
involved in.
Yeah, well, one of the, so we have a couple things right now related to the north end there. We've got, we've had a couple people come in and express interest in redeveloping that property where the cement factory or thing is. And we have a property owner right now that's waiting for a critical areas ordinance to be adopted to go in and is interested in redeveloping the property. So we've got that. We also have that is affected the ability to develop there. The privately owned airport then affects the occupancy of what can go in there. So I know that people have talked from time to time about things like a skating rink and things like that. The occupancy there, as I'm understanding, it will be too great, and so that has an impact on what can go there as well. All right. Anything further, board member Whalen?
No.
Okay. Board member, yeah. Can the councilor start off?
It's more of a question to the floor. Is that there are two projects, and each one is about $32 million. So which one are we going for? Which one is more, has more priorities than the other? Or are we cutting pay, so to speak?
Between Lake Fine and Crabman?
Yeah.
That would be the next series of questions, right? So you're right. As I'm sitting here looking at all this, I'm seeing the numbers, and I'm thinking about what you're saying about 20-year plans for each of them. You've got these two parks, but you've also got the need to put a park in on Northville for all the development going. You've got an interest in doing something in the downtown as well. So you've got competing things that I think we're going to all need to talk about and figure out where our priorities are and funding sources and whatnot.
And that's kind of where the vision and the value of the vision to put in a plan is then kind of offset with the balancing of that vision between all the priorities in the park. So what I strongly encourage is even if it's a 20-year plan, you leave it in the plan because an opportunity might come, you wanted it in the plan. The development might happen and you get this right off the bat because it's mitigation for doing some project. You know, if it's not in your plan, you can't really point to it and count it as a grant opportunity or, you know, other kinds of mitigation opportunities.
Anything further?
No, I'm not saying about not having a master plan for each site. I'm saying, well, this is one master plan, this is the other. 62
years.
40 years.
Yeah, we're ambitious. Yeah. Well, you do the master planning, then you go and you take that, then you look at the money.
Ultimately, match the project is that the budget and the money that you have available.
Yeah. I mean, we have these programs down into, you know, general fund, real estate excise tax, impact fees, and all these other things. And even their real estate excise tax, that then is going to turn around and compete with your transportation, a new city hall, you know, and all these other things we have to do. So there's a lot. So we have a comprehensive plan and why we put so much thought into these things. But right now, we're not constrained by that. So we'll go ahead and continue with this particular item. Anything else for now? Okay, Councilor Sardo.
Are you at liberty to say what kind of development is trying to go in and pay?
Not right now. Yeah, I don't know what's public on that one right now. Okay. Anything further?
All right. Okay, so then the two choices, what I would propose to do, and I'll work with Mike, really how far if we move this to be able to respond to the public comment and the feedback. And then this is a really minor one, but in order to circumnavigate and kind of have that shortcut on the north end, I need to shift. There's a little trail buried between 4 and 3 that we're going to shift around a little bit into 2. So a little bit less.
What's your time frame? Is this something that Mike could work with the Parks Advisory Board on to give some feedback on?
I think so. I mean, so we want to bring it back into council for adoption in January. So we propose to make those changes and then just kind of start to work through that adoption. And more or less, unless I'm hearing anything opposed to those changes now with the park board, we would roll them in and then just bring them back as part of the adoption.
Okay, what I'm talking about here is ordering the phases that you were asking questions about.
Oh.
Because you didn't get an answer on swapping the phases, did you?
I saw a whole lot of head nods. Yes, okay. Move it up. But exactly where to move it up to, we're probably not going to answer today. So
okay.
That question.
Yeah,
we'll come back to. Okay. All right. So upgrading the field, we'll fix the dollars.
Ecology, but grants are accommodating for the bulk of that. The partnership is, I think there was some portion that we're going to ask the school for, whether they whether we can get it or not, but that partnership wedge is to represent the school, to continue to try for that. Number two, energize the park. There's not a whole lot in terms of, so the reason you're not seeing a big chunk of grant in here is because it's an existing park. RCO grants, state funding grants to improve for special events are just not that competitive. All the existing uses are already there, so it's not competitive from a new use or a need standpoint. It's really making the park more functional, more ability to use it, more accommodating, more versatile. And that, well, it's great for the city, it doesn't make a great grant application. So there might still be, I'm looking into a couple for like beach shoreline enhancement type grants that we might be able to put a little bit of a wedge of a grant in there. I'm not seeing a ton. Partnerships is in there because of the events. And the philosophy I'm proposing at this point is to offset your costs with those vendors and those organizations that need the greater degree of flexibility and use and functionality in the park. So if we're going to hold the triathlon here, they can contribute a little bit of funding potentially to some of those improvements. So that's what that pie is. And we would basically make an assumption of a percentage that seems reasonable to shoot for as a whole.
Any questions? Rick?
Question.
Oh, sorry, Councilmember Scarborough. Sorry. Let's go with Councilmember again.
I know it's getting late. Can you remind us the area in the ground? Is that that you're highlighting there? Is that
this ground?
Concrete? Yeah.
Yeah, that would be concrete or asphalt paving. That's okay. To get your turning vehicles and movements to be able to get that stuff in and out of there easily. We did expend a little on this side also when those triathlons and those major events happening, having more staging, having more accessible areas for people to see, sit at, and view.
Right.
That's kind of what this down here is for as well.
Okay, thanks.
Ms. Nick? The bulk of that $7 million expense came from what? Seems like a lot of money, but not much.
Yeah, so the bulk of that cost, we have almost $1 million in paving. We assumed concrete, we can make that asphalt and make it less expensive, but we keep it conservative, so we assume a higher cost. I had a hefty cost for the playground. Mike and I talked about maybe reducing that. So I have about $500 for a playground expansion in here. Now, the existing playground did not cost. It was about half that, I think, maybe. We were doubling the size of the existing playground with new infrastructure in the master plan, so we could cut that. I mean, that's a significant, and make it a truly destination playground. We've been talking about maybe reducing that. New picnic shelters, we have a couple hundred in there for picnic shelters, and there's actually a fair amount for some wall and infrastructure in this, plus some lighting to kind of circumnavigate the park and lighting. So the paving infrastructure and the playground are kind of our highest cost items in that.
Thank you. Board Member Kavanaugh.
Can you show me again where you're talking about the paving? Is that the dark orange or the light?
Yeah, let me show you over here. The darker orange.
So all of that is going to be asphalt.
All of that right now is concrete for the majority of these. It becomes asphalt as it goes off into the larger trails. So the heart of this is concrete, and then we sort of have a break somewhere in here to turn it into asphalt for the trails.
Okay, and then you were talking about the enhancement for the playground. You're thinking it would be less expensive then?
Well, we're basically showing almost doubling the size of the existing playground. So that's about a $500,000 cost with new infrastructure, curbing, materials, all of that. The restoration of the existing was less than that because it was an existing playground and there was less infrastructure associated with it. That's a big expansion. It's a big, great playground now. We wouldn't necessarily have to expand it quite as much as what we're showing. So that was one opportunity to cut back a little.
Well, my comment would be, I would like to see that playground become more accessible than it is. So that could eat up some of that stuff.
So those are one of the reasons why we leave them higher cost, because it was redoing and making the surfacing more accessible enhancements to the existing one would eat up some of that cost. So we could just leave it alone as well. Okay, I'm seeing mostly head nods. We'll leave it alone.
Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. A question for clarification on that. You talked about lighting for the park, and now we have lighting going all the way down here.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the city park is closed from dusk to dawn, right? So we've got great lighting for people to walk, but it's not allowed. And we're talking about lighting the park, but so what's the long-term goal? Is it our long-term goal to light it up and just let people exercise and do whatever all night long?
So,
or
You're correct that the park hours are, you know, between dark and dusk, and there's a stretch of lighting out along the backside, you know, that people use around dusk and around dawn. You know. So my vision would be is we would amend the code to as otherwise posted. So I would expect that all the parks would have longer extended hours, because there would be more issues. But as lighting is developed in a community park such as this, that's how I would look at working with the board and the council to amend the code.
And I think that's a great idea, especially if we're going to light up all the ball fields.
I mean, lights are coming in certain types of activities.
Let's kind of make this that. And Councilman Hanford, some things to think about there too. When, like, the lighting up the backside of Lake High, that's a different kind of park. It's a linear park. It's like a sidewalk, right?
Sure.
And I know that there are people that run, you know, at 6 in the morning this time of year it's dark. There are people that might don't want to go out there and run at 4:30, you know, 5:30 at night this time of year. It's dark. So I think what we're looking at there is, you know, it's different to light up the walkways that are trails where people might be running or walking at night versus maybe lighting up, you know, core areas where there's playground where maybe the lights stay on until 9 o'clock or something. But again, it's a change in the code.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that I think that is important about the area that's won there, having synthetic turf where it's actually lit up, because you can't start, you know, lacrosse practice in January until the players come home, which is, you know, 4:30, and then the coaches are there at 5 o'clock. So that those are some of the thought processes that go through. And also, as we get more people to move here, and we tend to be younger here in our city than other areas, you have adults that want to go out and play in adult leagues, and they're not going to want to get out until maybe after dinner to go out and, you know, play soccer or whatever the case is. But yeah, definitely a code change at some point in time.
So my thought is that if we're going to do that, and light up little trails, things like that, light up the courts, light up the skate park. I mean, if we're gonna become that fully young park where people go and have a great time all late into the hours, I think it's great. But let's plan to do all of it, not just the trail and the ball field, and then everybody else is in the dark or kind of in the shadows, you know what I mean?
That's a good point. We don't currently have lighting in the courts or the skate park, but we do basically everywhere else, so we're looking at that one.
Any further?
I just have a question about the impact of the lights on the community surrounding too. If we're going to be lighting up the whole area, you've got people across from the park that are probably not going to be very happy about the light all the time.
There are some cutoffs. It is a fair distance in terms of the cutoffs and the fixtures, but once the parking lot is lit, if the park that extends into the parking lot, and I think it likely would, if you're going to light the field, you want to light the way to get to the field, there's some light still that would probably happen. Okay, can I move on?
Yes.
Almost. Okay, 3 and 4. So 3 is getting people out on the water. This is a fair amount of grants, because I think just, you know, it's a huge lake and you've got no real accessible way to get out to it. So I think it is a good grant application for water access, and that improves the hand carry boat launch with a little bit of a dock, accessible trails. This piece I heard back and forth a little bit. This is kind of that boardwalk. It is secondary. It's a second route. You can get up and around without it, but it was
also intended to be the most easily accessible spot to fish. So getting fishermen off the beach and somewhere else means I think we need to put a spot close to the beach to put them. That's what this little spot was meant to represent. So while it's expensive in terms of its own, it feels like a duplication in a plant view. That's kind of the main reason why I still want to leave it in. Now, having said that, you could simply reduce half of it. You know, you could not necessarily connect it and let it be a little fishing pot on its own would reduce the cost. I say that because it's about $800,000 of my $2.2 million. It's a big cost because it has to be a totally supported structure over water. So if there's anything I would change in that, that would be the one thing I think I would change based on the comments.
Customer Hanford.
Well, I don't fish, so do fishermen go on the actual beach where the kids
are going to swim? Yeah, all the time.
Oh, that's like hooking beach.
Yeah, and hooks in the sand and finding hooks all over the place in that area.
So we need some no fishing on the beach signs and then create that.
For them. And no feeding the ducks.
Yeah, that's
good. Any further? Perfect, yeah.
With the expansion of that area, improvement in different elements added to the, have you considered holding capacity for that area where they can accommodate the events that are happening simultaneously, if it happens simultaneously?
For the major events, we have not. Our assumption is when you have like the triathlon and everything, people know there's a major event going on, and not as many people are trying to use the playground and other sorts of things. And a major, like a regular summer without a major event, we did. We looked at the kind of capacity of improvements, what we can expand, how much more parking. We didn't do it in terms of hard numbers at this stage. We just know that we need to maximize the parking wherever we can. What we were trying to mostly do was look at conflicting users and separating those conflicting users. I don't know how many people fish. I just, like on a regular basis, every time I'm out here, there's at least a couple. And I'm not out here that often, but the people I've talked to says every time they're out there, there's almost always at least a couple. And they do stock it, so it's heavy at certain times of the year as well.
Anything else on this one? Okay, and real quick, Bill, how are you doing for time? Oh, I'm good, I'll speak. Okay.
Yes, we're almost done.
Do you have another question?
Board member Kenny?
I was just curious about this area for fishermen. If it's right by the boat launch, I know just I paddleboard out there all the time, and they are not happy if you get near them. So I'm just wondering about the choice of putting this fishing area right next to where people are putting paddleboards in. There's a lot of kids, a lot of noise. I wonder, are there any other options for locating that fishing pod?
There are. We've got more fishing pods in other areas around the lake.
Just from my experience, that would be a good idea.
And we did hear that people fish around the whole lake. So
they do.
So there is that opportunity, yes.
We
do in terms of this north end, we've got a couple of extra little wider areas as part of that system for fishing. If this is moving to no longer being phase 7, that's a more reasonable viable option, but 20 years to give a spot for fishing is not going to resolve the conflict. So I'm going for a more immediate, smaller, you know, separation where there's existing parking and existing infrastructure. But long term, yes, lots of opportunities for other areas. And as I get developed, those fishermen will start to disperse a little bit further.
Well, I see them all over the lake.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just everywhere.
But so they don't feel like the conflict is the guy that goes to the beach and was close and is easy. Mm-hmm. The guy that's trying to get out of the beach. There's a small spot.
I see what you're saying, but it doesn't.
Yeah. Like maybe the sign. Maybe some signage and more kind of policing that will help disperse.
Any further work better thing? Okay. That's what we're in for.
Does number 3 include the bioswale?
It doesn't include any enhancements to the bioswale. So there's an existing, you're talking about this guy right here. There's existing work that's kind of been done and an outlet here. It protects it. There's some enhancements up around the edge on the upland side of it, but not within the mitigation area and the enhancement area itself. Is there a project I'm missing?
Well, I don't know if that's
That's a high stormwater project.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's not a part of the park.
Okay. Got it. Yeah, it's a whole other cost.
Anything further on this one? All right, please continue.
All right, 5 and 6. These are really enhancements along the edges. We have partnerships because part of those enhancements are for fishing pods, which potentially is some partnerships with the fishing groups that we might be able to get some funding for. One of the bigger partnerships is we had envisioned a bit of an overlook viewing area for when you do have those large events that include some overwater structure, some staging, and some kind of informal amphitheater in the hillside. I assumed most of that cost, I gave it like 80% of that cost was from a partnership. Meaning if you don't have major events, you wouldn't build it. So let's have those folks who do the major events contribute a significant portion of the funding to it. If they don't contribute to it, I don't know that you would put that kind of infrastructure in place. So that's the biggest portion of that pie for the partnerships. Volunteers, there's a lot of planting in here. I think we could offset a lot of costs by having more volunteers to do the planting. A lot of the comments we heard was diversify the edge, make it a more aesthetic experience. A contractor puts all those plants in, it's very expensive. So one of the ways to, I think, offset costs is to get more for volunteers. Grants I have in here is a small pie. I just don't think there's a huge opportunity. There's not a whole lot of funding for these kinds of improvements for grants. Any questions?
Questions?
No. Okay. All right, 7 and 8. That's my cheat sheet. Last two. Okay, so other than moving 7 up, we had a $3.5 million cost in there. My partnership was really what Bill was talking about with the private partner, private development. I think I assumed half of the cost of that boardwalk overwater structure was through some partnership approach. If we move that up, I can still make that same assumption, which seems reasonable potentially. It's a little less conservative. Getting a private developer to pay for half of that cost, it might be kind of hard to do. But I think there's some value to trying, at least getting into the plan to try and push for that. And then lighting is kind of another cost again, getting the lighting to continue around that north end of the lake. Number 8, the one question I have here is we sort of, I heard some, again, mixed reactions with kind of the idea of these sort of floating wetlands. It's at the outfall to the lake. It's not like there's no recognized water quality problem in the lake. There's a high perception of water quality problems in the lake. The biggest comments I heard for the pro was bringing a shelter out here, creating this kind of environment, because we can't fill in the lake, but we could float things that would really give it a sense of scale. Would be a great, like, weddings and other kinds of features. It is one of the more expensive elements of it. So similar to our islands in the pond, I don't know if we want to keep it in. It's about $1.3 million for that wetland and boardwalk system out of the $2.9 million for that whole piece. So that's my biggest question.
Okay, board member Captain.
I have more of a comment than a question. Is, in looking at it, just my preference would be to move this up in priority and decrease the priority of 5 and 6.
Okay. So we could make this 5 and 6, and those edges 7 and 8. I actually think that's kind of where I would go as well.
Yeah, I can see 8, especially if you're talking about enhancing it for weddings or something, I can see that being a little bit of a revenue generator, perhaps.
Thank you. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. So throughout the both presentations of Kevin and Lake Tahoe, you mentioned on numerous phases of the partnerships and the events that come in, you're going to utilize it, might as well contribute to it. I'm just curious, what's the reality of something like that happening, just because there isn't these costs that are carved out for these and the events that we currently have, whether it's what you're referring to or not, would they contribute and how does that look like from our point of view, whether it's event permits or whatnot? So hopefully you can shed some light on the your experience with that and what kind of that would look like.
So
I've had a little bit of experience with this, but not a ton. Getting them to agree to put any money, like, of their own volition, very little. It really depends on the event and the organization that's coming through it. Making it part of a fee structure and a change to a fee structure, you're not going to raise a ton of money up front, but over time you could raise some money from that capacity. Getting them to agree to kind of host and sponsor a big volunteer day for planting, those kinds of things is far more viable. Getting them to just write a check for a large chunk of money is far less. So it's more, if we can think of an incremental way to partner, it seems to be more successful. Having said that, I don't know about the folks that run these specific events and they're more civic-minded. It certainly is a possibility. I do think there's, again, if you don't make a note of it in the plan to say that this is our goal, this is what we want to do, it's hard to have a starting point of the discussion.
Councilmember Scarborough.
Can you explain what you're talking about down here? You're talking about putting floating docks out there, and how does that come together with a wedding? And
yeah.
At what point are we taking all of the shoreline away from the fishermen and giving it to the docks?
Yeah, so the fishermen we kind of put down here, we put over here, we kind of put in other little areas, more like smaller little investments in, around the entire lake. This would really be a major investment to take the narrow spot. We literally filled, make it large enough to have an event, and in order to do that, we carve out in a few other smaller areas in order to create that space. Similar to floodplain, you've got to balance the cut and fill for the stormwater capacity. Any other questions?
The decking in the 7, the V that's down here.
Yeah.
So it's sort of redundant in that it is parallel to and very close to the trail on the north side there.
Mm-hmm.
But what's the purpose of the decking right there? I can understand from where the 7 is, trying to put in a decking or something.
So from 7 around here really is that shortcut.
Yep, that makes, I understand that.
Through here? This area I like to keep in because I think it's a fishing pond area. This area is less important.
Okay.
The reality of it is just less important. One of the main reasons we have this area through here is because this north end has the potential for different kinds of events. Like there's kind of the motorboat guys that kind of need kind of that smaller area, and they need to be down by the water.
Uh-huh.
But it's a big investment to circumnavigate the water.
Mm-hmm.
That, again, the value for the benefit, it's one of the areas that I actually would propose to probably reduce. So here I would reduce this. I think I would leave most of the rest of this. I would leave these from a vision standpoint and in addressing at least a recognition that there may be some water quality and some benefits to some wetlands at the outfall. I don't see it as being a high priority or something you would fund if there wasn't an actual need for water quality improvements, but I think it does help with the perception and the vision. So I would propose to leave it in, but it is an expensive item. I think you just qualify it as an as-needed kind of element. But I agree. I think we can reduce if not eliminate portions of that.
Okay.
Any other changes or questions?
Sorry, I don't see any others.
Okay. I think I've got pretty clear direction, and I'm mostly going by head nodding and nobody saying no, I completely disagree. So the things I talked about changing, I will intend to change. I propose to make this 5 and 6 and use these edge conditions of 7 and 8. Lots of head nodding there. We'll continue to refine our costs and assign numbers to grants, but I also saw a lot of head nodding that we do want to keep it more conservative, and I don't want to get too optimistic with who else might pay for some of these things. I just think a lot of sort of conservative, make sure we are realistic in our numbers. I see more head nodding at that end rather than make some big assumptions that might not be reality based. So we'll keep it conservative. Yes, they're going to be high costs, but we also know it's a long-term vision.
And much of what we've been talking about really has been confined to what we can illustrate on the plan. And some of what came out of the conversation is that there's a little bit more text background we need to integrate into this too, so it really conveys the message.
Right. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you guys for continuing to come out. And the joint meeting format has actually been really helpful.
right, if there's nothing else, I do need a motion from the council. Second, I have a motion to adjourn from Councilmember Rasmussen. I have a second from Councilmember Danner. Any discussion on the motion to adjourn? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 5-0. We're adjourned. Thank you, everybody.